Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. It is all about March Madness. Tonight, University of Arizona Wildcats and Xavier. Eric Sorensen is out in Los Angeles with U of A. He'll join me in a couple of minutes. I guess yesterday he was like an Uber or Lyft driver for Paula Bovin over at AZ Central. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I just didn't know we partnered to that extreme where he was actually chauffeuring her around. It's embarrassing for us as a company. We also have Matt Muehlbach with us today. Matt Muehlbach, former CAT, Pac-12 Network analyst, U of A color analyst as well. We'll talk about the number two seed Wildcats and Xavier with Matt Muehlbach. I'm going to get into the Arizona State coaching thing a little bit further on what direction they should go and some of the nonsense that's out there right now. The Suns last night had their worst loss of the season, and it was an embarrassment. And I've got to get into that a little bit more as the show moves on today. Also, yesterday we did get into LeBron James and how Kevin Love said that Russell Westbrook is the MVP this year, not his teammate. And what does that mean in the Cavaliers front of things? So while I'm talking about the Suns, I'll switch over to that a little bit. When Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones talk about teams moving, you know that it's coming. I was on a radio show in San Diego this morning at 7 a.m. They are freaked out because Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk reported this morning that the Chargers are determined to leave San Diego to go to Los Angeles. And I've got some thoughts on that front. This is not just an idle threat or just something to pass time. I mean, the NFL doesn't care about Dan Fouts or Louis Kelcher or John Jefferson or, you know, right down the list, Lionel Little, Train James, Gilbert. They don't care. They don't care. And when there are these markets that say, well, what about our tradition? I've got my lightning bolt shirt and they're never going to move. No, the NFL doesn't care. That's just how they're wired. So that's something that we will be talking about too. So with that said, let's get you caught up on what is on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino is just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. The Honda Resort and Casino, that is the place for you to get away from it all, pull down on the slots, eat some great food, have some fun. But beyond that, they have terrific entertainment at the Honda Resort and Casino, where you can get up and see some great acts that perform at the Honda Resort and Casino. So in the high country, you can get away from it all and have some fun, but see some great entertainment and enjoy it all in the White Mountain region. This time of year, there's still time to go snowboarding, sledding, and skiing at the Sunrise Ski Resort. Do it all at the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. Eric Sorensen joins us right off the top. He has been in Los Angeles. He was an Uber and Lyft driver for Paula Bovin yesterday, unbeknownst to me in our partnership with AZ Central Sports. I sent him out there to do stuff on U of A and Xavier, and he's just jerking around. He joins me now for a couple of minutes. Did you do any work yesterday? I mean, I looked at the site. It looked like you were kind of sort of busy. You kind of sort of did a couple things, but you're not really toting Paula around today again, are you?
No, no, no. She just asked for a favor, and, you know, we're here. I'm here to help others get to what they need to do.
Say no. That's it. Just say no.
I
have a job.
I thought it was nice. I mean, yeah. She's a fan of what we do. What's a little, I just gave her a lift.
I don't know.
And plus, she's from here, Brad, so she understands these crazy, chaotic freeways.
Yeah.
So I don't really know where I'm going.
Yeah, that's fine. It's fine. Okay, let's get to the serious stuff here. So yesterday, you were able to sit in and hear from Coach Mack and hear from Coach Miller. Tonight at 7:15, we have Xavier and U of A. Is U of A going to be challenged at all in this game, from your view and the people you've talked to out there? Or is this just another speed bump to meet up with Wisconsin?
The U of A players were certainly saying all the right things. T.J. McConnell said, well, if we don't come to play, Xavier will beat us. You know, and I know, Brad, we've been around these press conferences long enough. When players and coaches say things like that, you can translate it as long as we don't beat ourselves, we should be fine getting to the Elite Eight.
Yep.
And kind of the buzz in the media center was already kind of looking towards Saturday's potential U of A-Wisconsin Elite Eight rematch, because we know what happened last year just down the road in Anaheim. It was one of the one of the better games of the tournament last year, a game U of A had in control until midway through the second half when Wisconsin took over and eventually just pulled away down the stretch.
I don't know much about Coach Mack other than he and Sean Miller are tight. I know you did some video stuff on this. What can you tell us about Sean Miller's relationship with Coach Mack and how tight they are?
Coach Mack referred to Sean Miller as a mentor and someone who has guided him through the ups and the downs of coaching. Xavier is one of those schools where the expectations aren't quite as high as, say, a place like Arizona, but Xavier is no stranger to the tournament. I mean, they've made it to the Elite Eight. They've been to a handful of Sweet 16s. And Chris Mack, if you look back through the history, Pete Gillen, Skip Prosser, Sean Miller,
yep,
Thad Matta. I mean, there are some very, very good coaches at one time or another that led the Musketeer program. And he is pretty open and honest. I mean, he even said, hey, if I have a question or if I need some advice on coaching, I'll call Sean or we'll be in text throughout the communication through text throughout the year. He's an impressive, funny, young, good coach.
But does he have nearly enough for tonight's game?
I don't think so. I mean, I just, again, it goes back to the fact that, you know, someone asked Coach Mack yesterday, well, what can you tell us about Arizona? And he looked straight into the cameras and said, well, they're one of the few teams, if, you know, besides Kentucky, they really don't have a weakness. People will say, well, Arizona doesn't shoot well from the outside. But if you leave Gabe York open, yeah, if you leave Stanley Johnson open, they're going to hit open shots.
Right.
So, again, the reoccurring theme was we need to figure out a way to slow down TJ McConnell. But what's unique about McConnell, he said, Brad, is a lot of times when you have these great game managers as point guards, they can't score. Mm-hmm. So you get guys that average 3 or 4 points a game but dish out 11 assists. McConnell's proven this year when he is needed to score, he can score, which makes tonight's task even more difficult for Mack and Xavier.
What about the coaches? And we're talking with Eric Sorensen. He's live in Los Angeles. You know, yesterday, here's Eric's gig, guys. For all those of you who are sitting at work right now and you're slaving away, Eric got to sit in press conferences and hear some of the brightest minds in college basketball. Sean Miller, Roy Williams, Bo Ryan. No offense to Coach Mack, but three heavyweights talk yesterday. And when I don't know about you, Eric, but when I'm in those environments, like last week in Portland or even up in Los Angeles, in Vegas 2 weeks ago, I love hearing the best and brightest coaches talk.
You see a different side of the coaches. A lot of things that are said that aren't usually said come out in these types of situations. Yesterday, you know, Roy Williams, Gainwright for Wisconsin, Frank Kaminsky, everyone's asking, how are you going to stop Frank Kaminsky? How are you going to do this with Frank Kaminsky? Who are you going to guard? Who are you going to have guard Frank Kaminsky? And his response, he deadpanned, well, we didn't have any players that grew 8 inches from the time we left Chapel Hill until the time we arrived in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Bo Ryan has always been known for having sort of a dry, sort of sarcastic sense of humor. And even yesterday, when Sean Miller ended his press conference, I mean, we know Sean as being the tight-lipped, you know, straight-laced,
yep,
basketball. Even he, yeah, got up and he said, well, I look forward to seeing all the media out here tomorrow. And he kind of gave a little grin like, I did what I had to do. Now it's back to basketball.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's exactly how Sean is. All right, so you're not going to be coming home tomorrow. There's just not a chance U of A loses this game tonight, is there?
10.5-point favorites. Wow. It's going to be a big U of A home court advantage because you know there are thousands of U of A alums that live out here in L.A. and Southern California. I'm going to say that U of A is going to be playing on Saturday, and I think the majority of the media that are down here covering feel the exact same way.
All right. Good job there, and good luck tonight. I know there'll be plenty of content up on the site today. That's Eric Sorensen joining us out in Los Angeles. He's with the U of A and their program getting ready for tonight, 7:17, the Wildcats and Xavier. Appreciate him joining us for a couple of minutes. So the game tonight, I'm not expecting this to be a blowout either. There's something about Xavier that when you see them dig in, they're one of these scrappy teams that's gotten to this point. Yeah, if U of A shoots well from the outside, they could run them out of the gym like they did with Ohio State. I also think that Wisconsin against Oregon, if you looked at Wisconsin and Oregon over the weekend, that was not as simple as it appeared to be for Wisconsin. And North Carolina, it's not the greatest North Carolina team, but can they give Wisconsin a game tonight? I think they can. I do. But I don't know about you. I'm going to find my way to see Kentucky later today. It's one of those deals because there's other games going on. I don't care much for Bob Huggins. Some people love Hug. I myself am kind of, it's fine. But can West Virginia give Kentucky a push tonight? That's really the intrigue on all this. And what happens with John Calipari? Is John Calipari better off staying at Kentucky or going to the NBA? There's a certain narrative around John Calipari that he's got this itch he needs to have scratched by heading back to the NBA, and with the Lakers being a transition team and the potential of Kevin Love and all this stuff pointing to John Calipari and the Lakers perhaps this summer. That's of interest to me tonight as well. On the other side, so somebody with the Coyotes is in trouble this morning legally. The Chargers situation, the Sun, there's a lot on my mind. Just got a text from Matt Muehlbach. He's had something pop up out in L.A., so I don't know if we're going to get him right on time, but we'll work on that, and we'll just continue on a busy Thursday. You'll hear from some of the U of A players. You'll see them, too, in video form coming up later in the show as well. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports, we partner with the Arizona Republic on a Sweet 16 Thursday. Sports360AZ.com. We are Arizona-centric. Matt Muehlbach sent me a text a couple minutes ago. He's got something that's come up that's urgent. So we'll see if we get to him in this show or not. It's fine. And some other guests we're working on as well. So this morning, if you're not aware, the Coyotes, who have done absolutely nothing this year, finally showed their teeth. Nick Boynton, who joined the Coyotes broadcast team prior to this season, is accused of causing a disturbance at a Buffalo Creek casino, at the Buffalo Creek casino on Wednesday night, fighting with police officers assigned there to provide security. He was arrested for allegedly biting a cop at the casino. There's a lot of jokes you could insert there because the Coyotes have just been completely off the radar screen this year. And for those of you that are fans of the Coyotes, I'm not picking on them. It's a fact, okay? Anybody who's going to say, oh, you shouldn't point out their inadequacies, I mean, they've just been terrible, beyond terrible. And I like Dave and I like Don, but they've just been a complete train wreck. And so, yeah, you have to have a little bit of a sense of humor on this where somebody shows his teeth and puts up a bite before he gets arrested. I don't know. Insert the joke there. So that's, and on social media, that is what a lot of people are talking about. I had a hard time today getting ready for this show because I don't know about you guys. When I heard this morning about the flight that went down overseas, there's things that go on in our space and in our lives. And you are supposed to just fight through this and pretend that stuff doesn't happen in the real world. We're in the world of fun and games. And that's great. But when you hear about a guy who's co-piloting a plane, and if you've not heard about this, then I would suggest, you know, you might want to broaden your horizons a little bit. When you hear about a pilot saying, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and he goes to the bathroom and the co-pilot turns around and locks the door, and immediately puts it from 38,000 feet to 100 feet on the autopilot, and all you can do is hear him breathing, and you hear passengers screaming in the final moments, and they don't know why or how or what at this point, whether or not terrorists, mental health is one of the biggest issues in our country, and in our world, mental health is. If this story doesn't give you a WTF moment, I was over at the Biltmore this morning with Peter King. Peter comes on the show during the football season, and we agreed, let's get together and have breakfast and get caught up. And the first thing we said to each other had nothing to do with football, okay? And it shouldn't, is can you even begin to believe or imagine this story? Can you even begin to put your arms around it? And we're just kind of both sitting there shaking our heads, and we walk in over at the Biltmore and we're having breakfast and we order our stuff and we're still talking about it. And eventually we got around to talking about some football, all the stuff that's, it's fine. It's that stuff's important to you, to me, it's his job, my gig. But all of us today have to be saying to ourselves, what is the mental health of the guy who is in that plane? I'm not a fear monger. That's nothing that I've ever been. But you can't tell me that when something like this comes out, that you can't say to yourself, man, those poor people got on a plane and they never knew that the guy that was in the co-pilot's chair would do something like this. He was 28. He was in flying clubs, from what I've read, what I've heard. And it's very early in the story, but it's completely taken over our country today. And so while the sports stuff is important, and I try to make light of what happened to a Coyotes radio analyst, all morning long I've been wanting to get more and more information about this story and try to even put it into context of how a plane could be taken by a co-pilot and driven into the side of a mountain and what those people were going through in their final moment. I can't even begin to imagine that. So that's been on my mind today. The NFL, and Peter and I talked about this over breakfast a little bit, but the Cowboy owner Jerry Jones and the Patriots owner Bob Kraft, those are two that are the biggest voices within the National Football League. Those are two heavyweights. And when those two talk about and endorse and believe that there's going to be two teams in Los Angeles by next year, you can guarantee stinking tea that there's going to be two teams in Los Angeles by next year. This is no swipe towards the ownership groups in any other place, including here in Arizona, no swipe. But when you're around it long enough and you see that those are the guys that have some thoughts about it and that they're not downplaying it at all, well, that's when you should be worried. And any NFL city, and unfortunately, it's the city that I grew up in, and some of you are Charger fans. I mean, it could be the Bengals or the Steelers or whatever city, fill in the blank city. If the NFL doesn't like your stadium situation, and we went through that here with the Arizona Cardinals years ago, they didn't like the stadium situation here. There was all sorts of talk about maybe going to Los Angeles. Los Angeles is a leverage chip. But now when you see what's going on in the landscape and with Kraft and Jones both talking about by next year, now if you're a fan of the Chargers, if you're the Raiders and you move to St. Louis and you're the St. Louis Raiders, to me it's just kind of like, the Raiders have moved before. They're carpetbaggers. They're Raiders. You know, I don't like or dislike the Raiders. I just know it's a commitment to incompetence with the Raiders. That's how they've been through the years. And so when I hear San Diego moving to LA, you have to understand from a contextual standpoint, those of you that grew up in Southern California, a big part of our audience has moved to Arizona. LA hates San Diego and San Diego hates LA. Like, San Francisco does not care about San Diego, but San Francisco hates Los Angeles too. People in LA, in the sports world, the Dodgers hate the Padres hate the Dodgers. The Raiders and the Charger fans have never, ever liked each other, all the way back to the Holy Roller days and even before that. You can even go back in history, as before I was around, before I was born, but the L.A. Chargers. Chargers used to actually train and actually play in Los Angeles. So yeah, there's all this history, but the NFL doesn't care. What the NFL wants is a stadium, and quite frankly, the stadium in San Diego has been a dump and has been a disaster for the last 20 years, much like the Cardinals played in a dump over at Sun Devil Stadium. UASU fans don't like to hear that about your beloved Sun Devil Stadium. It's a dump. And finally, mercifully, it's starting to be torn down and refurbished and brought up to speed rather than when I was a kid and I went and saw ASU football and Coach Kush and all that. There's no disrespect to Frank. Love Frank. But when you live in the past and you can't move to the present, you're going to get left behind. And that's what's happened in San Diego. I remember the Chargers and Cardinals used to train together up in Flagstaff, where the Cardinals would go over and train in La Jolla. And it was a terrific marriage in the offseason, terrific working together and all that. To think that San Diego is going to lose their NFL team up to L.A. is, and this morning Mike Florio brought it up, that It's one thing became clear via the chatter among those in attendance. The Chargers are determined to leave San Diego for L.A. They haven't said so publicly, and they likely won't for months to come, but enough is being said privately to lead to the inescapable conclusion the Chargers are destined to escape from the city they've called home since 1961. Getting an NFL team to go back to a city takes a lot of work. I remember when the Cardinals were threatening to move out of here, and there were people saying, well, we'll just go get another team. It's not that simple because you have to have the stadium in place. Fortunately, the Fiesta Bowl and the Cardinals paired up, and the Cardinals were able to work some magic by the skin of their teeth, and we're able to get a stadium here. It's built in the wrong part of town. I mean, it should never have been built over on the west side, but nonetheless, we have a stadium here. And it comes at a time where I just saw where University of Phoenix is getting crushed. I've just crushed in online enrollment. So it's all about timing, too. If they tried to do that now in a naming rights deal, they'd be in big trouble. So that story is on my mind today about what's going on in San Diego. Because part of me still is there. I was never a Charger fan. Never had the lightning bolts and all that stuff. But it's where I grew up. I'm not a fan of any team, but it's where I grew up. The Suns last night were just absolutely embarrassing. Like, I don't know. Oklahoma City's losing by 44, and their game is over to San Antonio, and you can't muster it up. Yeah, Eric Bledsoe was sick, but Eric Bledsoe didn't play well either. Just, well, he was sick. You shouldn't expect that much. It's sacrastinking-mento. You have 11 games left in the season, and you're at home, and you're not playing back-to-back. And somehow, our hometown heroes on the basketball team find their way into blowing a game at home that they had absolutely no business blowing. It was their worst loss of the season by a long, long, long ways. And I get tired of people that sugarcoat this. Oh, tough night for the Suns. No, it's an awful night. It's an awful night. Bring the sledgehammer. Don't bring the fly swatter. Let's call it as we see it here. They gave up 31 in the first quarter of the Kings. 31. Here's Jeff Hornacek after the game, where, you know, it falls on the coach, falls on the players, falls on the administration, falls on owners. Everybody failed last night.
You can't let a team get going in the first quarter. We gave them 31 points to start the game. When a team scores 31, we know how it is when we're on the road and we score 30 points in the first quarter. Now you feel confident that you can score on the team, and that's what happened. And we never really got to stop them.
And our hometown hero, Mark Keith, picked up another technical. Way to go. Three games back with 10 to play. Can you tell him a little disgusted with them? Because, look, it's going to be three games back with 10 to play. Their season last night slipped away almost. They've got a fingernail left. They play Oklahoma City on Sunday night. You know, Oklahoma City losing by 44 was just saying, please get us off the court against the Spurs. So last night was just terrible. By the way, last night in the NBA, road teams were 12-1. For those of you scoring at home, those of you that are playing the odds, those of you looking at the Vegas thing, best night in a long, long time around the NBA, 12-1. Scott texts Matt Muehlbach. He is going to join us here in about 2-3 minutes and had something come up. So we'll talk some U of A here on the other side. Sports360AZ.com, NCAA, I should say. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Matt Muehlbach is next on U of A, getting ready for Xavier. I want to talk to Matt about the point guard, TJ McConnell, and stack him up against the all-time greats. Yesterday, we talked to Miles Simon about that, and he was searching and was terrific about it, but it's not an easy answer. And when you see McConnell tonight, if you've not watched him, he's not going to go out and rip the rims down, but he's terrific. Matt Muehlbach is next. Stay with us. Reminder, Eric Sorensen is in Los Angeles with the U of A. I was in Portland and Vegas and decided, you know what, I got to save up for Indianapolis. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Brad Sussmat with you. Eric's got plenty of content. I saw like 6 stories, video written. He's with the team. He's done some great work out there. And he'll be there tonight doing a lot of content during the game and then tomorrow as well. And we'll be checking in on him here shortly. Matt Muehlbach joins us now for a couple of minutes, Pac-12 Network analyst, former U of A Wildcat star. How are you?
Terrific, Brad. How you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you coming on for a couple of minutes. I know it's a busy, busy day. Is this merely a speed bump for the U of A to Wisconsin tonight, Matt?
It never is. There are zero easy wins in the NCAA tournament. Look, all things considered, yeah, they should win this game. They're better than Xavier. But we've seen this before. So, the thing I like about this team and, knock on wood, certainly, is Sean Miller's 13-1 against teams that are lower seeded than him. So that is, and by the way, the one loss was to Wisconsin last year when Arizona was a 1 and Wisconsin was a 2. That's one of the most impressive records, that you could ever talk about a coach in the NCAA tournament.
Sean, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that there's still some people as part of Wildcat Nation or whatever term you want to use that haven't given him his full due because he's not Lute Olson. Am I right in that?
That's a great question. I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so. I think most of the people I've talked to, most of the people I know what I hear, I think they have given him his due. And, certainly, on his resume, he doesn't have a Final Four yet. He doesn't have a national title. But he's 46. I think Lute went to his first Final Four at Arizona when he was 47. And so, we used to do the, you always see the Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah.
Who got to the majors first. I mean, I think people realize how lucky, U of A is. I think Sean Miller one day will be in the Hall of Fame. I think he's that good.
Mm.
And the odds of Arizona, bringing on a coach that could, even in the conversation right now, let's put it this way, it's real early to say that, but even if that's in the conversation, to follow up a Hall of Famer with a guy that I think is one of the brightest, he's really young. You talk about young guys, kind of newer coaches in the conference and even in the country. He's only 46. So
sure.
He's got so much time. So no, I think it's time for him. And I kind of feel like this is his year.
See, here's where I'm getting at. When I was in Vegas, I had some fans that said, this is our year to get to the Final Four. Okay, that's fine. Then I had others that said, we better get to the Final Four with this team this year. I get fandom. Okay. I understand that, but I've also had the long-timers that have sent me notes saying Lute would have had the last year's team there. I disagree with that. Brandon Ashley was hurt, which people underestimate the loss of Brandon Ashley last year. And so I don't know if the shadow is too big of Lute over Sean Miller. I don't think it is, but I do believe that there's always – I'll give it to you this way, Matt. It's like the people at Arizona State that said Frank Cush would have done it this way, okay? And I think the same thing with Lute Olson. Well, Lute would have done it this way or that way, and they kind of have the blinders on. It's a vocal few, I will tell you that. It's not like the masses, but there's some out there that want to see this team push through.
Well, yeah. That part of it, you're dead on. The Arizona fans are always going to feel like they should be there. But part of the, again, some of those fans, it's revisionist history because you look back and, remember Arizona went in 88. That was my freshman year. Arizona didn't go again until 94, despite almost every single year being a 1 or a 2 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, that history just reminds you how difficult it is. And it also reminds you that the cruelest part of March is that luck, destiny, fate, whatever you want to call it, actually plays a huge role. And, again, if you took, my team back in 89 that got upset by UNLV, if we played the best 3 out of 5, we would have won probably 10 out of 10.
Hmm.
But you play one game, as we know in this tournament, and that changes the odds dramatically. And so even back then, as successful as all those teams were with Coach Olson, it just shows you how difficult it is to get to the Final Four, year in, year out. So I think Sean's right on pace. And if he gets there this year, obviously, then it's a moot point. If he doesn't, he'll be back at it again. And, again, I'm not bothered by it because I just know how tough it is this time of year.
Matt Muehlbach with us for a couple of minutes, Pac-12 Network analyst. If you were to talk about and rank point guards in the history of U of A basketball, where would T.J. McConnell rank in terms of his performance in U of A history at point guard?
It's a great question. Some people have said he's on the Mount Rushmore, and I don't know. I mean, I say forget that. The main thing is that he's in the Pantheon.
So he's in the building, right?
Of the Pantheon.
He's in the room.
Point guard U.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, no one was better than Mike Bibby. He's the best U of A point guard of all time. It's hard to say anybody was much better than, other than Bibby was better than Kerr and for what he did. Stoudemire right there. Certainly Jason Gardner, Jason Terry. But then I think after that, he's right there. He's in that mix. He's in that conversation with those guys. He's like a Gardner. He's like a Reggie Geary when he played the point guard position. And so I think he's in that, as I said, the pantheon of them. And to me, that's the most important thing about it. I think the thing I love about him more than anything in the world is he's just a winner. And I remember when he sat out, I remember asking the coaches about him, how's he doing? Because you're worried about him coming from a mid-major to a big-time major. You don't see that often. You see a lot of guys transfer sideways or even down. You don't see him transfer way up like he did. And they said, Matt, every team we put him on in practice, he wins. We put him on one team, he wins that game. We exchange the point guards, and he wins with the other four guys. So that, to me, is his best, achievement so far. And as much as anything, as an Arizona fan, you're kind of pulling for the team partly because of him.
Up on the questions, let Matt Muehlbach go. Has Tarzewski played up to his capabilities so far here in March? I've heard a lot of criticism from fans on that one.
Yeah, I've always been, really bullish on him. And, he's got a ways to go, I think, offensively. As he's not a perfect offensive player, but I think defensively, he's one of the most underrated centers in the country. I think the two guys and three guys, or maybe it's four guys from Kentucky, are the best defensive centers in the country. It's not even close. But he's right there behind them. I mean, he anchors, everything they do. And so I think on that side of the ball, he's terrific. I think offensively, he's getting there. And a lot of it for him is confidence. And so I think he's a good offensive player at times. At times he struggled, and his confidence was down. I think where he struggles is when teams play zone. So when you see teams play in the zone, he doesn't get the same looks, he gets in some of the other games. But I think he's been terrific for this team, very underrated. I will say this, if they happen to get to the Final Four and play Kentucky, he will be maybe the most critical guy on the team. The irony of that is if they play Wisconsin, he may not have a matchup. You think about the way they play Kaminsky and Nigel Hayes outside. That's a hard matchup for him to play out at, 22 feet against those guys. You may see him play less minutes in that game.
And my response to fans is, I don't know. When I was in Vegas, I had a half dozen NBA guys say he's going to play in the league. So, it's a developmental thing in that you can have a bad game or two. And there was no question earlier in the season he didn't play well, but I think to just bury the kid is wrong, because I think that there's quite a bit of talent there, in my opinion. Before I let you go, before I let you go, we're talking with Matt Muehlbach. What's your view on Arizona State letting Herb Sendek go first and foremost?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say about him is I was fortunate to cover him, and I mean, he's a really, we know he's really smart. And he's a very good coach. I really enjoyed covering him. And, I mean, he was always a complete gentleman to me. And I think it was funny, being from U of A, he was a little bit hesitant maybe at first. But he was great. I mean, the more I covered him, the better. I mean, he was just really good with me. On the other hand, I get it. I mean, I can see that, teams are thinking they should be in the Sweet 16 like their rival and like other teams. And So I guess I understand the business, and you know, part of the issue is if you get into that business and you're a super high level as a coach, you know, that kind of comes with the territory. I'm not sure I agree or even disagree with it, but I get the decision. I guess the question you always ask after that, though, is, okay, who are you going to get?
Right.
You know, because he was a good coach, and he did some really good things. I mean, I'll tell you, the Knicks guy is going to have a tough time having a record against Arizona that's as good as his. But I get it, too. You know, there was some frustration maybe with not, you know, going as far in the tournament. So I get that.
Josh Pastner's name has been all over this from a media standpoint. Josh hasn't said anything. Memphis, he's still the coach there. Would Josh Pastner be a good fit for Arizona State? He's not won a tournament game. He's 5-20 against top 25 teams at Memphis. Mm-hmm. Put all that to the side, we know he can recruit. We know he's tireless in effort, with his energy. What is your view of Josh Pastner at Arizona State potentially?
You know, I think he could do well there. I don't think he would even look at it, but I could be way wrong.
Mm. Why not?
I just think when you think of his ties at Arizona, I don't know if he would go there.
Mm.
That's my first instinct.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I guess we've seen it a little bit. You've seen Mike Montgomery. You know, he went to Cal after years and years at Stanford. So we see it every once in a while, but I don't know. I mean, I really don't know what he's thinking, but I said this all along. I said that job to me requires, maybe the most important element is it really requires someone who's incredibly good with the community. It requires a personality. It requires someone who's got a tremendous personality to kind of fight through, you know, dealing with all the other things that you have to deal with there, you know, pro football, pro basketball, pro hockey, pro baseball, ASU football team that's playing well. So that to me is the difficulty, is making that where a team like Arizona in a college town, it's so easy to be, or it's become easy, especially because of the tradition, to be the game in town. And so how do you do that up there? And I think you've got to do it through an incredible personality. You think about one of the guys who was the most successful was Bill Frieder.
Yeah.
He had a great personality. He was a guy that could connect to a lot of different people. And I think that, to me, one of the overarching number one things you want from that coach.
Yeah, and fans don't like it when I say this, but I believe it. I've been here 23 years. That job's a mirage. Until you get somebody that is completely committed on the administrative end, Dr. Crow, I think Ray Anderson is the absolute right hire, but as long as I've been here, that job's a mirage. It looks great on the outside. You get it on the inside, and there's nothing there. There's no commitment. The building is archaic. That's not an excuse.
No, I agree with that.
But do you have a name or two that you think that would be a good fit for?
You know, I'll tell you this. I'm like everybody else when those things come up, you know, when those coaching hires come up, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really interesting to watch. But I will say, you know, there's so many names that really surface early and people think they have their guy. And the reality is no one knows. I mean, no one knows who the right fit would really be. You think about USC, in USC football, they went through, what, six guys they were looking at until they got to Pete Carroll.
Right.
And Pete Carroll has been, I'd say, the most successful college coach in the last, you know, other than like Nick Saban, maybe.
That's a good point.
He was off the charts.
Yeah.
And so you think you know who you want, and you think you know what's out there. It's so incredibly hard to figure out that fit and what they project as. I'll tell you, I mean, I'd go after the guy from Wichita State. I mean, I love the way the team plays. I love his, you know, his energy, kind of his toughness. That'd be a guy I'd certainly look at really closely.
Yeah. The question on that one is, do you pay the basketball coach more than the football coach? And, you know,
you better be careful doing that.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate your time as always, Matt. Thanks.
Hey, loved it. Thank you.
Matt Muehlbach with us. It's always good to catch up with Matt. Good stuff there. You know, the ASU job search, you know, I've got people pushing Steve Lavin and Jeff Capel and Josh Pastner my way, and I can sit here and poke holes in each one of them. I just think you've got to aim higher. You know, we're talking about guys that just because Steve Lavin gets to the Sweet 16, is that what you're going to settle for? Because he has West Coast recruiting ties? There's a lot of people with West Coast recruiting ties. You know, do you want a caretaker? I saw Mike Montgomery last week up in Portland. I would love to have Mike Montgomery here. I would absolutely love it because I know he's just not going to be, well, kind of, sort of, maybe. I know that, and he's somebody that appears to me to be on the backside of the coaching end of things. We sat and visited in Portland for quite some time, and he's brilliant. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. General Manager Tim Hovick sent me over a note. Hey, let's get together and watch March Madness Thursday. So I'm going to be with Tim watching March Madness today. It's a partnership, right? We genuinely like each other. I'm not going to sit there and talk business with him. He's not going to deal with me. We talk about our families, talk about life. I've sat in his office when he's been on the phone with his mom. I mean, it's just life. So when you have life at you, you have to go get that vehicle, right? That's part of life, is I've got to get a new car, a new truck, certified pre-owned, whatever it may be. I was talking to someone the other day, a well-known person in town. He sent me a note. Can you get me over to Tim Hovick? I'm looking at getting a vehicle. We're thinking of getting something used. I said, well, look at the certified pre-owned. Oh, tell me more. Well, it's what my wife did with the Ford Explorer. Made a lot of sense for us at Santan Ford. And I connected him to Tim. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Go through the experience yourself. Shop online at santanford.com or stop on in Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. On the other side, we've got some video of the U of A players with Eric. A few other things are on my mind today here on a busy, busy Thursday. But tonight it is all about U of A March Madness against Xavier and then potentially Wisconsin, North Carolina. What if North Carolina beats Wisconsin tonight? And what if U of A wins? What if U of A loses? What are they going to say about Sean Miller? Get to back to more on the other side. Stay with us. Go through some of the matchups or players tonight for the University of Arizona against Xavier. So Stanley Johnson goes back to Los Angeles. Stanley Johnson gets on the floor. He did not play well offensively up in Portland in the second round matchup against Ohio State. Did not shoot the ball well, and yet U of A found a way to win easily, which I think is a good sign for them. Here is Stanley Johnson being asked about mentors. This is in Los Angeles, being asked about on team mentors, Stanley Johnson getting ready for tonight against Xavier.
You always say Rondé was very similar to how I was coming as a freshman. So, you know, I learned a lot from him as well from TJ. But I think at the end of the day, it was Coach Miller. When we talked and when we said stuff and on the court, like, I really believed in what he had to say. And that's what it's about. If you can do that, you can succeed anywhere.
And he's got to play well for them tonight on the defensive end, obviously. I think there's enough offensive firepower if, in fact, U of A is able to get their shots up from downtown. Here is TJ McConnell getting ready for Xavier tonight.
We want to get to a Final Four for Arizona and for, you know, the city of Tucson. But, you know, we can't overlook this game because, you know, if you do, that's the team that will beat you. Xavier is going to be very ready tomorrow, and they're going to be ready to play. And I mean, if we're looking already towards the Elite Eight or the Final Four, you know, that's how you get beat. So we're not really looking ahead right now. We're just trying to focus on Xavier.
Spoken like a true coach, because he is going to be a coach someday. There's no doubt about it. He's terrific. I've had a man crush on him, if you haven't been able to tell, the last couple of weeks. Like, it's almost embarrassing how I just slobber all over myself about TJ McConnell. And he's never going to win a slam dunk competition. I don't care. He's never going to be the highest guy to jump. He's just going to go out, and it's like watching Steve Nash or watching Aaron Kraft. There's just guys that will come out there and rip your heart out. Just rip your heart out. And he's a quiet assassin. That's the only way to put it. So Xavier's coach Mack, getting ready for Arizona, was asked about their weaknesses for tonight's game.
Usually when I watch tape, or we watch tape as a staff, you can point to a few weaknesses. You can say that this team doesn't do a good job in this certain area, whether it's transition defense, whether it's communicating switches defensively, whether it's they don't guard post players very well. That's the thing that really comes across when you watch Sean's team on tape. They don't have any weaknesses.
I would disagree with that. I think, as I talked about earlier, with Matt Muehlbach, that Tarzewski offensively has not been very good. You watch the number of balls that go off of his hands, entry passes, or plays that he's not able to finish, both in Vegas and up at Portland. And U of A fans are sitting behind me in Portland were on him for the offense. I mean, I'm not going to sit here with red, white pom-poms all day long and say everything's great. It's not quite right, I think, with their interior game. Brandon Ashley has played better. But does he have enough on his own tonight, and especially as the tournament moves on? But you just take this, the old cliche, one game at a time. So Wichita State, Notre Dame tonight. North Carolina, Wisconsin tonight. West Virginia, Kentucky tonight. Wow. You talk about some big-time coaches and some big-time games. And coaches that, quite frankly, Ray Anderson should be looking at. You know, I'll go back on the Arizona State job here for a couple of minutes. George Raveling is one of the bright minds in college basketball, and he's somebody that I follow on Twitter. And he went through the interview process for coaches. And it seems very basic. And I've sat in on interviews at my kids' high school for coaches. Completely different, I understand that, but you could see how they're ill-prepared. Colleges, I've talked to the people that are in the room, administrators that are in the room, when it's all said and done, tell me how so-and-so interviewed. And you'd be amazed at how he came across as awkward or she came across as hard to understand, or there was no vision, or if it's a football coach, they just want to know about the weight room. They don't care about boosters. And, you know, all these things that ended up reasons why they did not get the job. So during George Raveling's rant about this, and I think it's important for you Sun Devil fans to know, all interview committees will have two types of people, those who really count and those who think they count. Make sure you know who is who. Very basic. So you walk in the room and there's six people, or is this just Ray Anderson with this other person? Is it Ray Anderson and Michael Crow and some people on the legal side? Is it Ray Anderson and Dom Bakke? Is it Ray Anderson? Fill in the blanks as to who is going to, is it Greg McElroy and Ray Anderson? Is it just those two, or is it just Ray? Research the selection committee and find out how many ever played competitively. That will tell you how you must customize your interview. Well, here's the thing. Ray Anderson, basketball player, Ray Anderson coming from the NFL background. That's why this hire to me is going to be very interesting about Ray Anderson. Now, Ray Anderson did play competitively, but not on the basketball court. More from George Raveling. During the interview process, your demeanor must be relaxed, positive body language, strong eye contact, high energy and enthusiasm, confident. That seems to be pretty basic. But let me ask you something. When you see coaches like Todd Graham, for instance, can you imagine Todd Graham sitting in an interview and not having strong eye contact? No. High energy? No. Enthusiasm? No. Can you imagine that with Rich Rodriguez? No. Can you imagine that with Sean Miller? You've probably seen enough of Sean Miller. Relax body language. Sometimes I look at Sean and think his head is going to explode. He's so wired. Strong eye contact, sure. High energy, I believe that. Enthusiasm, confidence, sure. That's what you want out of a coach. That's what you want out of anybody. That's what I want here. You know, I got these nightmare employees like Jordan Hamm and Jared Nielsen who just kind of wander in and do their thing, and Eric and Jared, and it's just dreadful some days. So, you know, I want to see this type of stuff out of them. And so when you go through the list of names that's out there, could I see Josh Pastner grabbing a room? Yeah, I could. But then if I'm on the interview committee, why is it you've never won an NCAA tournament game? You followed John Calipari. Why have you not been able to? And why is it you've only been to two? Okay, that'd have to be a pretty obvious question to me. Can you explain your 5-win and 20-loss record against top 25 teams that are in the Associated Press? I mean, it's pretty easy to say, well, he can recruit. I don't know. Peel the onion a little bit. Let's find out why he hasn't been able to do these things. And maybe I still hire him. Maybe I look at, well, he's been put in a bad situation at Memphis. They didn't have the resources. They didn't have the financial commitment. He couldn't keep his assistant coaches. I don't know. But I got to find those things out. You're Steve Lavin. Okay, Steve, you had great success at UCLA. You had some health stuff. Now you're back. Same questions. Are you a Sweet 16 guy that's as far as you can get? Or are you truly a guy that can win a national championship here year in and year out? I want national championship winning coaches. I don't want guys that just recruit well and that's it. Jeff Capel. So, Jeff, what happened at Oklahoma after Blake Griffin left and you went 29-33? Am I to believe that the administration wasn't committed? It's great that you've gone to Duke for Duke rehab, is what they joke about it down in, you know, down in Chapel Hill. But, Jeff, if I'm going to hire you in 3 to 5 years when Mike Krzyzewski decides to retire, are you the guy that is going to be the coach that replaces him? And am I merely just giving you opportunity to sharpen your sword here in Arizona and then you're going to leave me and go back to Duke? I think it's very fair in Jeff Capel's spot to wonder, is he the guy in the pipeline to replace Krzyzewski? If you don't wonder that, then I don't think you're really plugged into college basketball. Doesn't matter if it's Wojciechowski, if it's Bobby Hurley, Amaker, Dawkins. There's a whole bunch of guys from the Duke tree. Have they all done well? Have they all succeeded? Do I want a coach who went to Virginia Commonwealth, then went to Oklahoma and got fired, had to go back to Duke, sit along the sidelines, and maybe he's better now. Maybe he is. Maybe Jerry Colangelo is somebody that reached out and said, let's connect you to the dots to Arizona State. I find that hard to believe given Colangelo and Michael Crow's little tit for tat that's going on behind the scenes, but you know, that's what I've heard. So none of these three get me over the top excited about where the program is today. None of them. And it's not that they'd be bad hires, but I certainly wouldn't sit here and say, I can't believe they landed a guy that never won an NCAA tournament game. I can't believe they landed a guy that got fired at Oklahoma and had to go sit alongside of Mike Krzyzewski. I can't believe that. Oh, Mike, what a great hire. I don't know that. It all sounds good. Well, Jeff Capel recruited Jahlil Okafor. Yeah, D-U-K-E, not ASU. You're not getting Jahlil Okafor to ASU. It's not happening. Read my lips, not happening. So you go through these guys, you go through some of the interview techniques, and I hope Ray takes his time up till the Final Four next week. There really is no reason to step forward today and say, this is our guy. Unless you're just absolutely certain the coaching hiring cycle, you're going to lose out on that guy. Wait to see what happens with Greg Marshall. Aim high. Go reach out to Shaka Smart. And if he says no, he says no. But you don't know. You may be able to offer him something here. You hire Shaka Smart or Greg Marshall, now you're in a different atmosphere. Completely different atmosphere. And that's what I want them to do. I don't want them to be mired in mediocrity for another 20 years. Bring in some guy and 5 years from now, he's gone. Sports360AZ.com. We have plenty of content on our website. College, high school, pro. Eric is with the U of A basketball program out in Los Angeles. Throughout the day, check back in. He's putting up lots of video, lots of stuff on Instagram and on Facebook and Snapchat and Twitter, where everybody is going with their content. Sports360AZ.com.